Okay, here we go. Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here today, this is our first show on our new website, and I really appreciate all of you joining and switching over to the new website, ReikiTalkShow.com. The new format is that I'm going to have an hour show, and it'll run for 55 minutes, kind of like a therapist hour. And we won't have any breaks for commercials. And the other thing is that I'm hoping that we will be able to have not just single interviewees, because in an hour maybe we can have two or three people join me. So keep that in mind as we start on our new journey. The subject for the month is precepts. And we're going to do one element of the system every month. So this month is precepts. And with me is Winthrop Wilshire. He's from, well, he's moved now. I used to say Trinidad and Tobago, but he'll tell you where he's from now. And I've known Winthrop from I don't know when. He'll tell you that too. And I've invited him here because he has a passion for the precepts, and especially just for today, do not worry. Well, welcome, Winthrop.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I assume that you're not worrying.
No.
No, not about anything.
No, not about anything.
All right. Great. Well, Winthrop, tell us about how you met Reiki.
Oh, that's an interesting story. I come from a family of nine, five boys and four girls. And two of the girls, one of them was living in Canada, Rosina, her name, and another one, Halcyon, who was visiting from Trinidad, did something called Reiki and told me about it. Now, we have a very close-knit family. So when they told me about it, my first question was, when can I do this? When can I do this? So then, some months later, this was 93, in January 94, Halcyon, who was living in Trinidad, brought the Reiki master, Lynn Armour, actually, to Trinidad. And the first Reiki class in Trinidad was held in my uncle's house.
Wow.
Yes. And there were a class of nine, and six of us were Wilshires. Four adults and two of our children, you know, and three others who were told by word of mouth. That's how I met Reiki.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So what was that like, taking a Reiki class with your family?
Oh, it was phenomenal. It was this beautiful experience, you know, and feeling the newness of this thing coming in Trinidad.
Uh-huh.
And something interesting happened. When Lynn was talking in the first evening of the class about how big Reiki was in the world, in Germany and Holland and other places, I said to myself, so what happened? Are we the backwards? Why is it coming only now? And then I caught myself. That must have lasted for only about 5 seconds. And I said, Winthrop, relax. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. And then and there, I was decided that I would become a Reiki master.
Really?
Right, on my first day of my first class.
Well, whatever possessed you to have that thought?
It was, this thing has to be spread, I mean, you know? Yeah.
Because it felt so good?
Yeah.
Is that like a physical feeling?
No, it was a physical. It was just something that came up, yeah.
Amazing. So now, I've met some of your siblings, but not all of them, obviously. And they seem to be spread all over the world. Everywhere we go with Winthrop, he's always visiting some relative or something. But, so does your whole family now have Reiki?
There are nine of us. Eight of us have Reiki. Three are masters, and five are second-degree practitioners, and one is a first degree practitioner.
Wonderful.
Four secondary practitioners, one's a first degree. Only one hasn't done Reiki, and he receives Reiki treatments. He says, I don't need to do it because you all can treat me when I'm ill.
Well, that's a very good attitude of his. It saves him some money.
Right.
No, just kidding. Well, that's neat. And I understand your mother, Rosa?
Rose.
Is still alive. She's...
She is 95. And up until a few weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, she was swimming in the sea in Barbados because she's a very strong swimmer. And there's a very intriguing story about that.
Oh, do tell.
About 2 weeks ago, Sunday the 9th, as a matter of fact, after some problems, health problems, she decided that this is the end, I'm dying, goodbye everyone, thank you for being so patient with me. And then she chose her funeral dress, her what she should be buried in, she chose her hymns. And then 3 days later, I put her on what we have, which is a Reiki support health line.
Uh-huh.
And the next day, she changed her mind.
She decided it was not a good day to die.
No, and she decided she's going on, and she said, put away the dress, and she's now as strong as ever again. Phenomenal Reiki story.
Yeah, amazing. But that has happened to her a few times other than this, right? That every once in a while she goes through these, like, spells where she thinks she's going to die and then she gets Reiki?
Well, she never came to this stage. Never came to this. She's been sick before, but not to this level where she's given up.
I see. That's right.
And being helped to go to the bathroom and stuff like that, and now she goes to the bathroom by herself.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Great. So, what was it like for you to be in Trinidad?
Trinidad.
And be like one of the first Reiki pioneers there, was it pretty strange?
Not really. I told everybody about Reiki.
So you weren't such a stranger after a while.
No.
And what was that? What was that like for the people? Did they meet it with openness or
total openness? Somebody says to me, if I didn't hear it from you, I wouldn't believe it. You know, because they knew me in another context. I'm a scientist by profession, and, you know. And then, interestingly, about a few months later, I was at a conference in the States in another area called counseling, and somebody from England says, you know, Phyllis Furumoto, the lineage bearer, is going to be doing a workshop in England, and students are going to come. I said, what? Because my master had given me the impression that Phyllis only related to masters, you know. I said, I'm going to be there. And I told Lynn. Lynn says, no, that's not true. And then Lynn checked. And she found out, yes, it's true. So she told Penelope to look out for me. And I just decided that Phyllis is going to be in England and students come there. I want to meet Phyllis. And that was in Birmingham October 1994. I was a mere secondary student. I say mere, but of course, I was a secondary student.
Right. Passionate.
Exactly.
Excited.
About Reiki.
Right.
Yeah.
So at that point in your Reiki life, did you connect very much to the precepts, or were they just something that your Reiki master talked about?
It was just something the Reiki master talked about and something that I had not yet internalized.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were there. But even around then, I used to give out my brochure, which had the precepts on the cover. And I remember the principal of the University of the West Indies in St. Augustine telling me, and he was not a Reiki practitioner, nor his wife, telling me that his wife put them up on the fridge.
Really?
yeah, that's right. She says she loves these, and so she stuck them on the fridge.
Wonderful.
The precepts.
Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. So tell me about your journey with the precepts.
Okay, just for today, do not worry. I have had a few bouts of intense worry. In 1990, I was managing a very large, I would say program, not a project. I was a UNESCO Science and Technology Advisor for the Caribbean and managing a $550,000 program because I used to choose individual projects in biotechnology and microelectronics and choose somebody to head it. And 1 year into that project or program, there was to be this big review. It's called a tripartite review because United Nations people and CARICOM's Caribbean Community Secretariat, UNESCO, were to review it. And 1 month before that, I was in total fear. I said, suppose this thing goes badly and they take away this money from me. And I would wake up in the morning and it would be, suppose this review goes badly and they take away the money from me.
My God.
And I would be dancing with my wife on Friday or Saturday night, and what's going on in my head? I'm dancing, okay, but what's going on in my head? Suppose they take away this project from me, you know? I couldn't turn off. I couldn't switch off. I also had a problem understanding when people say they're depressed, what do they mean? I'm taking pills for depression. What is that? And I got a little glimpse of that. The review came. It went beautifully. And I said, what was that about? So I began to understand some what worry is. That worry encompasses a component of fear.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yes.
And then I met Reiki and heard of these precepts and started to think about them. Just what they do not worry. And I said, you know, all we have is today. So if just for today we do not worry, we never worry. And what is worry anyway? Worry never solves anything. You know?
Sure keeps us busy.
Keeps us busy. It's yeah. Like it's like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it gets you nowhere.
So if you want to know what those claps are, the little sharp sounds are, those are Winthrop clapping his hands. It's a personal thing that he does, so don't get so excited. He's not hitting me or anything. So then you had this really major insight about worry. And then what happened the next time? Did you deal with your worry differently?
Well, I developed an awareness of what worry was. And I started, in fact, teaching it in my classes when I became a Reiki master a few years later in 96. Spending a lot of time dealing with worry.
Uh-huh.
Because what I found is that lots of people worry.
Yes.
But they don't know what it is they're doing when they worry. So each student in my class, I'd say, what's worry? I say, there's no wrong answer, and they give me an answer. What's worry? What's worry? And then I give them my version of what I think worry is.
Uh-huh. So, all you listeners out there, beware. So, we want to just take a few seconds to let you just think about, in your own life, what is worry to you? Like, where does it take you, and where does it come from? So, we'll just have... Okay, so and now Winthrop, share with us your definition of worry.
I call it the anatomy of worry or the dynamics of worry.
The anatomy of worry. I like that.
All we have is the present moment.
Uh-huh.
The past is gone. There's only one thing you can change about the past, and that's how you view it, your attitude towards the past.
Mm-hmm.
The future has not yet come. So all we have is the present moment. In the present moment, we make choices all the time, but many of those choices are made without full awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Every thought is a choice. Most of the time, an unaware choice. There are two main factors that have an impact on our choices. Factors within our control and factors outside of our control.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what worry is. We create a thought of something that we do not want to happen. And we focus on that thought in fear and in powerlessness.
Uh-huh.
So I define worry as wallowing in fear and powerlessness over the possibility or probability of a perceived negative or unwanted outcome.
Wow. Okay, so for those people who didn't understand that,
I can say focusing in fear and powerlessness.
Uh-huh.
About a perceived negative or unwanted outcome. And I'd say why I use the word perceived negative.
Okay.
Because you're going for a job interview and you desperately want to get this job and you're worrying about not getting this job and you don't get it. And 2 weeks later, a much better offer turns up. And had you got the first job, you would not have been able to accept the second, or available for the second offer.
Right.
So that's why it's a perceived negative unwanted outcome.
Right.
Of course, sometimes the issues are quite rare. Your brother, your husband, your sister, your friend is very ill, and you're wondering if they're going to die. Sometimes the issue is quite rare.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, concern is very different from worry.
Concern is different from worry.
Yes.
Okay, tell us.
Concern is the awareness of the potential problem. And functioning within your domain of control, within your sphere of control, you identify what action you can take to have an impact on the outcome.
Before it happens.
Before it happens.
Uh-huh.
So if the clothes are on the line to dry and you don't have an electric dryer and you're going out, you don't worry where, you don't go out and then worry whether it will rain. You take the clothes off of the line, you bring them inside. In the Caribbean, we dry on the line, you know.
Right.
You bring them inside until you come back and then you put them out again.
Yes.
Because worry never has a positive impact on the outcome.
Never.
Never.
Now, you know, in New Age circles, it's like this, you never say never.
And when some people say to me, you know, that's easier said than done about not worrying, I say, tell me one thing that's not easier said than done. Yes, it's a challenge. I had an intriguing experience in a class 2 years ago.
Okay.
This woman was a warrior. She worried about everything. And I have a brother who assists me in the class, and he used to get very agitated by her, you know? And we dealt with this issue of just for today, do not worry. I was happy that she did not get me on the telephone 3 weeks later because she wrote me an email. She is in her 40s. She said, Winthrop, I do not recognize myself. I have had a class with you for one weekend and I'm a completely different person. I used to be a warrior from birth. And I'm giving it up completely. Thank you very much.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did she do that, do you think? Give it up completely?
Just by internalizing the discussions that we had in the class.
Uh-huh.
She'd be worrying about simple things, I mean, you know?
Like whether she got a parking place or...
Or whether her mother would close the door tonight. She used to live at home with her mother, and, you know. She just gave up the fear and decided to trust. Oh, I have a beautiful one.
Wonderful.
I say to people in the Caribbean are very religious.
Really?
So yeah, they go to church often. I say, do you go to church or do you go to the temple? Because sometimes I have a lot of Hindus and Muslims in my class. And they say, oh yes. And do you pray to God? They say, oh yes. You believe in God? Oh yes. I say, well, if you go to church or go to the temple and you worry, you are a hypocrite. And they say, what? I said, you know that when your agenda differs from the divine agenda, you know which one will prevail. They say, yes, the divine agenda. I said, why? So why are you fighting the divine agenda? And they say, oh, my. So when I put it in that context, they realize, okay.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So Winthrop, you have... a couple of interesting kind of one-liners, we could say, about worry. Is that true? But I'm trying to remember them right now. So I loved your story about the person who, about the divine plan?
Divine agenda.
Divine agenda.
Yeah.
And trusting that divine agenda.
And trusting the divine agenda. And saying, in fact, thank you, whatever happens. That's the last piece which we're not dealing with today, but...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, let's see. So worry is based on fear, or comes from fear of what might happen.
That's right.
Yeah. And mostly the what might happen is something that we don't want to happen.
Exactly.
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 So you can do a couple of things. You can leave it because we know that If you leave it, then there is a divine agenda. Mm-hmm. But if you don't believe in God and divine agenda, then maybe you can believe in Reiki, which is what a lot of people, you know, connect to, right?
Right, right.
And then one of the things about Reiki is that it becomes a lifestyle. So part of that lifestyle, or the characteristic of that lifestyle, is seems to be to understand that Reiki brings you what you need, and that if something looks like it's not really what you need, there'll be something else down the road that will be even more fitting.
Of course.
So it builds our trust. So I feel like what happened for me is that I started with, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I started with like a 3.5 trust level. And now I'm kind of up to 9. So I feel like I've come a long way. But that's a really huge path to walk in Reiki, and a very huge difference in the amount of worry that I have. So tell me something. We'll delve into your secret places.
I'm about 9.5.
You're about 9.5.
Because I'm totally relaxed about outcome. And talking about one-liners, worry is like paying interest on a debt not yet taken out. Or on a loan not yet taken out. You know, you're paying interest on a loan not taken out. Because very often, mm-hmm. you worry, and what you were fearing, the outcome you were fearing, never comes to pass. Yeah.
Exactly. But is that because you worried? Or is that just because there was a divine agenda?
There was a different divine agenda, what you were fearing. Like, for instance, like having that project and that money taken away from me. Because one of my fears was UNESCO had only small amounts of money. This was what we got from what we call extra budgetary resources from outside of UNESCO. So if that money was taken away from me, I would have to go back to Paris where I could say, well, give me $50,000 for the year or something. Whereas I had $550,000 to play with, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that money wasn't taken. And did you complete your project successfully?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. I had many different projects solving problems with bacterial spot in peppers and tomatoes, using a professor from the University in Barbados in biotechnology to, you know, do lots of stuff. Microelectronics, information technology, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So do you talk to these guys about Reiki?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
And tell me.
One of them had told his girlfriend about it, because he was in Barbados and she was in Trinidad, and she came and did my class.
Ah.
Yeah, and I am just so enthusiastic when I talk to people, because I feel that the way you project when you're talking about Reiki determines very often how people respond to it. People have never heard about it for the first time.
Yeah. So if you're really enthusiastic, yeah. then they often get very enthusiastic.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
They say, this must be something good. I mean, did I ever tell you about my experience being interviewed by two ministers of religion in Jamaica on television?
That must have been worrying.
And one of them said to me, could this thing come from the devil? And my spontaneous response was, the devil is not part of my worldview, but if you are an expert on the devil and prepared to sit at your feet and learn about him, the other one says, take that. But in fairness to him, he was being, quote-unquote, the devil's advocate, because after the interview, they came to my hotel and we sat at the bar and drank juice, and he says, I have a pain in my shoulder. Please put your hand on my shoulder and give me some Reiki. And there was a woman in town in Kingston who had lupus, who was going back to the country that afternoon, and the class was starting that afternoon, and the two of them convinced her to stay in Kingston and do my Reiki class, and she did.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Amazing. Well, what kind of questions did they ask you, these two ministers, besides that one? Can you remember what the interview was kind of like? Because I didn't really know that your community was so religious.
Oh, yeah, very, very religious. All kinds of who can do this? Do you have to be of any particular religious persuasion?
Oh yes.
Do you have to believe in God? How do people hold this? Could they do Reiki and still keep their religion?
Uh-huh.
All kinds of things like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, one of the interesting things about my experience is that when people ask those questions, they're hard sometimes to answer, because if you give them a general answer, quite often Reiki leads them into a very different path. And they go, well, like, what's this about? So what I try to do is to talk about the effect that Reiki has on each individual. And I'm wondering, so what was your answer for them? About, you know, what is the effect of Reiki, and what is, you know, what would it do for me, and so on.
Well, one of the simplest things I tell them, I say, if nothing is physically wrong with you, you become very relaxed.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And you become de-stressed.
Uh-huh.
And they can relate easily to that.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So when we give ourselves Reiki and we become de-stressed, as you put it, then is it more likely for us not to worry from that?
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. The more you put your hands on yourself, the less stressed you are. In fact, it was only yesterday, while we were here, that I realized something that I hadn't realized, because I do these daily, I've been doing these daily workshops with teachers recently, empowering teachers with emotional coping skills, when I talk about worry, in fact. And at the end of the day, I feel as if I've gone for a swim. And it was only yesterday in our discussions around mealtime that I realized it's because I put my hands on myself and don't get tired.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it definitely has a calming, relaxing effect.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So would you say that giving yourself self-treatment is one step toward not worrying?
Most definitely. No question about that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
And
oh.
Then what else? Kind of the five steps to not worrying.
Ah, very, very importantly. Very, very importantly. Staying in the present and identifying the factors within your control that might have an impact on the particular issue that you're dealing with.
Uh-huh.
Because when we worry, we become very destabilized, off-center, and we're not able to think clearly. We're not able to bring our full rationality to the problem at hand.
Right, right. So I feel like the operative word there was a little phrase called the things that we are in control of.
Exactly.
So there's a great prayer from this 12-step program, yeah?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
yeah.
The courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
And I think that's really tricky, because quite often what I've gotten into in my own life is saying to myself, well, somebody else has to move before this can be different. Like, this person has to change before the situation is different. Or obviously, I have to move to a different city in order to have a different whatever it is. Or, you know, it's always the outer world that's different. And I realize, and I'm getting more and more layers of this, of course, as I grow older, that often the things that look like they cannot change actually can. And I don't know if you have any advice on how to make that break.
Well, one piece is the conscious acceptance of what is the situation that you're presented with, and not fighting the current situation.
Uh-huh.
That's one piece.
Give
up the fight of what is.
Wow, that's tough.
Accept what is as a present. But what is called the present. It is also a present.
Right.
When you're given. Accept that and relate to the next moment.
Uh-huh.
Because what is, is.
Uh-huh. What is, is.
Right? Yeah.
And then when you, so you've accepted the present, you've seen some things that you could change, or maybe the things that you cannot change, then if you're wise enough to know the difference, then how is it that worry goes away? Like, is this a linear kind
of
approach?
Because the most critical component of worry is fear. Uh-huh. Okay? And where there's no fear, you're just thinking rationally, what are the options? Do I do A? Do I do B? And another element is trust. Uh-huh. You know? So, okay, I'll do A and see what happens. But there's no fear attached to it. That's a critical component.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what happens to about fear then? I guess that's the next question.
And if the fear is only a 7-second fear, that's fine.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
Fear is okay.
And I'm not talking about when you're being attacked by a ferocious dog or something, that instantaneous fear. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this long-term thing.
Uh-huh.
Where you're focusing on the fear or wallowing in the fear, as I prefer to say. You know how a pig wallows in mud?
Right.
Yeah.
Slops around.
That image.
Rolls around.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the fear just goes away. It just goes away. I was not aware when I actually stopped worrying. I just realized one day, you know, withdraw. You don't worry. It just happened. Yeah.
Amazing.
And people say, you look so calm. What some of my students tell me, and some of the teachers I teach, is when they start stepping out of worry, people around them say, you don't care. You don't care about this. Why are you so calm?
Right. That's a great question.
Yes.
So what's happening if you don't worry?
Yeah, because they are assuming because you are not agitated,
uh-huh.
you don't care.
Uh-huh.
Because some people tell me, but worry is human nature. And I said, oh, no. Worry is learned behavior.
Oh, now there's another one-liner for you guys. Worry is a learned behavior.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then,
tell me about that.
And then I can, when somebody says, oh, I worry a lot. I said, I can tell you that either your mother or father was a worrier. And then they say, oh yes, my mother worried about everything. They can always trace it when I point out to them who they learned it from. They had to learn it from somebody. They had to be made to feel destabilized and comfortable.
Uh-huh.
But if all your needs were provided for when you were young and everything fell into place, you wouldn't be worrying.
That is really interesting. I'm going to have to think about this one. Because that means that there could be a pattern that you learn that is worry, that you worry about some things, like maybe health or maybe money.
That's right.
But it's a very specific worry.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Are you sure this is true? Worry is learned behavior?
That's my intuition.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that seems to be proven out in your class.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whenever I say, okay, tell me about your mom, and they immediately can bring it up. Yeah, and tell
That's
me exactly
amazing.
Where it came from.
Amazing. So how do we de-learn worry with Reiki?
That's a good question. That's a question I get often. So how do I stop worrying? And I become very glib. I say by stopping.
Oh, thank you very much.
By decision. First, by awareness.
Uh-huh.
Of what it is, because so many people, when I ask them, tell me what worry is, they don't include the issue of fear in it.
Right.
They say, just something that concerns me for a long time. And when I refine and say, it's fear is involved. Oh, yeah. Okay. And guess what? If we could give up fear in all aspects of our lives, we'd be all beautiful human beings.
Great.
Yeah, especially the long-term fear that leads, for instance, to stress.
Right.
Because I also teach that stress is optional.
Oh, gosh. Another one of his one-liners. Stress is optional. Okay.
I said, one way of thinking about the world, one paradigm, is that stress is out there and you meet it. I say the paradigm that I function by is that challenges are normal. And how you approach every challenge determines whether you experience stress or not.
Okay. I think you have to say this again.
One way of seeing reality is that uh-huh. stress is normal and you just meet it.
Right.
And certain situations are stressful. And I say, no, there's no stressful situation. I say challenges are routine. They occur regularly. And how you relate to each challenge as it occurs will determine whether you experience stress or not. In fact, I've written an article in a book published by UNESCO recently, and the first chapter is on this issue of empowerment. It's called Empowering Teachers with Emotional Coping Skills to Promote Sustainable Development. And I made the point in my draft, I said, the pharmaceutical companies would love us to believe that stress is normal and pills are the solution. I said, because stress is a multi-billion dollar industry.
Totally.
Do you know that they took that out? They edited that out. And when I asked them, why did you edit this thing out? They just smiled at me. Stress is a big, big industry, a multi-billion dollar pill industry, you know?
It is. Wow. And, isn't that amazing? I mean, for some of you listeners, this might be a kind of a mind blower. I want you just to take it in a little bit that if you have thought up until this time that worry was not changeable, that you couldn't change what you worried about, or you even couldn't change that you worried, or you couldn't change your stress level without changing everyone around you, that's actually not true. The change comes from inside of you?
From within.
But that's kind of, as you said, easier said than done. So it's not just Reiki treatments, but a kind of different stance of life.
That's right.
So how do you talk about that?
I say, well, recognize that worry leads to stress.
Uh-huh.
And you don't want to have stress, do you? No, stress is not nice. So you want to get away from that. And one way to get away from that is every situation you face, see if you could determine what you can do about it. Because you are powerful. We are all very, very powerful, but we sometimes minimize our power or don't recognize it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And guess what? Some things are outside of our power, outside of our control.
Like what?
And leave it alone. I give such simple examples. I mean,
okay.
They're obvious. I said, you can determine what clothes you put on to go to work every day. But you cannot determine whether it will rain today or tomorrow. That's outside of your control. Those are two stark opposites.
Uh-huh.
And if you attempt to do that analysis with everything you face, you will see you'll be able to determine the difference. What is within my control, what my sphere of control, and what's outside of my sphere of control.
Uh-huh.
And guess what? The only person you can change is yourself.
Yes, this is the part I don't like. Because I sure would like to change, you know, that gas station attendant, or that person over there who really bugs me, or maybe even a member of my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens then?
And it's okay to say, why couldn't everybody be like me? And give up the need to be right. That's a biggie.
That is really a biggie. Gosh, I hope you guys are making a list here. This is really a tough list, but it'll give you a few weeks to work on it, eh? Okay. Okay, what was it again?
Give up the need to be right.
Give up the need to be right. So does this have anything to do with divine agenda?
It could, because I was telling somebody at lunch today that when I was very small, I used to believe in God because I didn't want to go to hell, so it was an insurance policy. And now I believe in God because I know there's something bigger than me. Talking about believing in God, I was doing a television program in Trinidad once, and it was not a call-in program, but the interviewer said, "This is so interesting, let me open the lines." And the first question I got was quite a surprise. Do you believe in God? And I said, oh yes, I believe in God. But the God I believe in is not some white man sitting up in heaven saying bad boy, bad girl. You know, the God I believe in is spirit. Yeah.
It's spirited.
It's spirit. Spirit.
Spirit.
Spirit, uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what does the spirit do if we believe in him or her or it?
Or it, as the case may be, yeah. It's just there providing safety. The birds don't worry.
The birds don't worry. I thought you said bullets.
The birds don't worry.
Okay, the birds don't worry.
So
are you sure?
I'm not sure about that. I have a feeling I have.
Another feeling, right. So we can assume that birds don't worry.
Yeah, we can assume that. That's right. And in my present state, where I don't worry, life proceeds beautifully, and I just feel good about myself. I feel relaxed, and yeah.
Yeah. So do you ever get the feedback that maybe you're a little too airy-fairy for the real world?
No. People just accept me as I am.
Well, that's great. That's great. So what was it now? Oh, give up the need to be right. So talk a bit about that.
It's so easy to want other people to agree with our views, our thoughts.
Uh-huh.
All right? And consciously, we have to recognize that every individual have the right to their own opinions.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I tell people, it is pointless to argue. You don't argue about facts because you can always check facts.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't argue about opinions because each person has the right to his or her opinion. So you never, there's never point for to argue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to think that opinion is wrong because mine is right.
Right. Well, you know what happened to me when I first started practicing Reiki? The thing that always kind of really, and this is a kind of funny expression, but I feel like it's fairly descriptive, blew my mind. So what happened was it shattered this belief that I was always right or that I could be right and somebody else then had to be wrong. You know, this is a very interesting thing because I think not only giving up the need to be right, but assuming that if you are right, somebody is wrong.
Yes.
And that assumption is actually, well, I've learned that it's not particularly true.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an accurate assumption. So the place that I bring it back to is in the treatment process where you put your hands on someone and your hands get really hot. And then after the treatment, you think this person is going to get off the table and say, wow, that was a great treatment. Your hands were so hot. I was sweating, right? And they get off the table and they go, And you say, well, how was it? And they go, well, it was okay. I didn't really feel anything. And you're going, what?
Yeah.
And I feel that it's such a profound lesson that Reiki gives us that, you know, two people can experience, in theory, the same thing, which is hands over the eyes. One person experiences a lot of heat. The other person doesn't even feel anything. Who's right and who's wrong?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What a profound lesson. And this is this feels like one of the basic lessons that Reiki teaches us kind of by the way. Like, I wonder if it's difficult. Do you think it's difficult for students to take this experience and then apply it in the rest of their lives?
Well, before that, I would say the way we are socialized at school is about right and wrong.
Yes.
The way we're brought up.
Yes.
So it's very difficult to get out of that frame.
Yes.
Because it's a new way of being and thinking.
Right.
You have to unlearn what you thought was normal. If something is right, the other thing is wrong. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But so that's why when I teach Reiki, I teach my students, it doesn't matter what you feel. What you feel might be very different from what the client feels, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
So I alert them to this possibility.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a great opening, and it was a great opening for my mind because I was very hooked into right and wrong, and then what follows that, of course, is guilt, and then what follows that is fear.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's an interesting chain of events, and what you're trying to do is work back from worry to fear to guilt, possibly guilt, and then to this place about being right.
Well, let me, as you mentioned, guilt.
Oh, okay.
What I teach is that guilt is not a word in my vocabulary except for teaching purposes. I said I define guilt as you beating up on yourself and subconsciously asking others to beat upon you for something you thought you ought not have done, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I point out that remorse is different from guilt.
Uh-huh.
Just as concern is different from worry.
Uh-huh. So what's remorse?
Remorse is the awareness that you violated your own principles or somebody else's and you did something that you preferred not to have done and you've hurt or damaged someone.
Uh-huh.
And you can make amends for what you've done. The simplest way is to say sorry. I say, if you were driving drunk and your best friend in the passenger seat got killed when you got into the accident, you can choose to beat upon yourself for the rest of your life. That is guilt. Or you can decide, okay, I'm going to not drink alcohol anymore, and I'm going to send the children of my best friend to college and to, okay, you
yeah.
cannot bring her back. You cannot bring her back by feeling guilty.
Right.
So I say, forget what you were taught in church about guilt. I say, I know I'm being subversive here, but...
Not only subversive, but, you know, it really goes against what it seems like is normal human behavior. So do you think that guilt, again, is learned?
Guilt is learned. Guilt is definitely learned. Oh, yes. Your parents say, naughty boy, naughty boy, naughty girl. You should not have done that. You get punished, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we've learned in the last few minutes is that there are a lot of things we can change in our lives.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that really gives a ray of hope.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. And another piece.
Another piece.
Another
okay.
piece is be optimistic.
Oh, come on. Be optimistic.
In other words, think of the best outcomes. And when the worst outcome come prevails, accept it gracefully.
Uh-huh.
I am.
So you don't think that God has failed because he didn't give
outcome? No. You may know, Phyllis, that I am passionate about cricket. And the West Indies team is playing and they lose and everybody else is cursing them. And I'm saying the next match will be different.
That is a really good example.
Yeah. I'm relaxed, you know.
Okay, so that's a great example of how not to be in fear, how not to be guilty or put guilt on other people, and how not to worry.
And how because you're in acceptance.
Yeah.
Of what is.
Of what is.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, there's just some pretty big lessons out there. So your advice is give yourself lots of Reiki.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Most mm-hmm. definitely. And what about receiving Reiki from other people? Do you think that in some cases it's, well, I don't know, better is probably not a good word, but do you think in some cases it's more beneficial somehow to get treatments from others?
Well, my experience is that when I'm not well, I find treatments from other people seem to be more effective, if I can talk in those terms.
Yes.
I had two experiences. One treatment of myself, in that when I retired from UNESCO many years ago, in 1998, I did a compulsory medical, the UN insists on that, and I had a PSA, prostate-specific antigen, of 12. I was alarmed. I put my hand on myself for 3 months without doing anything else, and I went back for a test, and my PSA was 4.4. You know, the normal range is 0 to 4. So I tell people that I now do it routinely, and I say any pleasure I get is totally incidental. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. However, in 2006, when I had another problem, I had to call others and say, give me a treatment.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a treatment from my sister, Lynette, and then I put myself on the support line, and by the time I got to the doctor, my problem was solved.
Wow.
Yeah, about 5 days later.
Beautiful.
Yeah, my problem was solved just by Reiki. I said to him, have you heard about Reiki? He says, oh yes, so-and-so told me about Reiki. I said, she's my student.
Oh gosh, well, you live in a small community. But it's been really wonderful to talk with you, Winthrop, about this precept, just for today, do not worry. The thing that is really intriguing is how, you know, it seems like it's just a statement that's impossible to do. And then as you've opened the door and, what did you call it? Describe the anatomy of worry, mm-hmm. then it becomes manageable somehow. And that I feel like is really beautiful.
And more than that, it is so rewarding. The quality of life is totally different.
Uh-huh.
It creates a kind of relaxation over and above what you just get from putting your hands on yourself, you know, because it's a quality of mind, a freedom of mind, and an ease of being.
Right.
That results, yes.
Beautiful. Well, obviously, there's another assumption or learning that we have, which is that, you know, guilt and fear and worry and so on are unavoidable.
Exactly.
And your premise is they are not unavoidable. No, they are not avoidable. They are just another choice.
That's right. I'm going to give you a funny one.
Okay.
I was teaching a class of teachers recently, and one teacher, female teacher, says, so if your wife leaves you, would you not worry? And my response was, so why you pick on my wife and not your husband? And everybody laughed, and I didn't have to answer the question.
But if you had to answer the question, really, what would you have answered?
My answer would be, you never worry about the past.
Uh-huh.
Worry is always about the future.
Uh-huh.
And it's useful to have trust in the future. Certainly grief about the past.
Yes.
Grief about her leaving, but not worry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I'm sure all you listeners now have a lot to digest over the next week. And we're going to be back next week with another Reiki student and possibly a master who's going to also talk about the precepts again. So this is our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Winthrop, for being with us, for providing lots of sound effects.
Thank you, Phyllis. I enjoy this interaction.
Good, that's wonderful. And you know, when you see Winthrop's picture on the e-card, you've got to know that this man has just gotten married one more time, and you're
71.
71.
I was the oldest person in the group this week.
Well, you won't believe it, and his smile tells you that he doesn't worry. So let's take him as an inspiration for us all. Thank you very much. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence.